It is 72 degrees in the Twin Cities, 610. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Great to be with you. The Twins win again. They are amazing. You know, I just can't wait to get my little stars aligned to get myself over to Target Field to see a game. It sounds like it's so much fun. And listening to the games on CCO Radio, awesome. Awesome. I mean, it's so entertaining. If you're stuck in traffic, you can listen to the Twins. It's great. And also even watching the broadcast when I'm home, it's terrific. But can it be more exciting and more, I know that the All-Star break is still a little ways away, but gosh, they look awfully good. It's exciting stuff. And I'm sorry for the Gopher women's softball team. They've looked so good all season. They did so well. It's obviously a very tough step up, but they looked amazing. And next year, some of those gals will be back, and I think it's going to be a great thing to follow. So anyway, great to be with you on a Saturday evening. It is such a beautiful night, and it's so nice. I just actually left a really, really nice party for there are a whole bunch of people at TV that are retiring. They took a buyout, and it's a lot of people. And it's sad. It's bittersweet because you know that they're getting a great opportunity to retire a little bit early. I'll miss them. But it was just so nice to be outside, for a great, nice, wonderful Minnesota get-together, on the porch. And it was just just sort of a beautiful setting, and everybody was there. And I thought, my gosh, I haven't done this since last summer, enjoyed, the people I'm with, and just had, something to drink, a little food. Really, really nice. And it's great that we're back in that season. It's wonderful to just, be back in it wholeheartedly. Listen, we've got a great show lined up for you. We are going to talk in just a few minutes with Representative Jamie Becker Finn about a proposal that will provide transportation for child visits to Shakopee Women's Prison. And we're going to talk to Representative Becker Finn about this proposal and what it means to women that are incarcerated, what it means to families, what it means to the children. And think of that, what it means to them that they can connect with their moms, even though they are incarcerated. And then we're going to talk the second half hour with a legislator whose legislation has gotten an enormous response. It was buried in the environment omnibus bill, $900,000 to pay Minnesotans to make their yards be friendly. And we're going to talk to the representative who sponsored that, because the Star Tribune did a story on it. I did a story on it over at television, and people are going crazy. They can't wait till this money becomes available. And we'll tell you when it's going to become available. We'll tell you, what are some of the things you could do to your lawn to make it be friendly. It's really cool. And the 7 o'clock hour, we are going to get a preview of the music from the music critic at the Star Tribune, Chris Remenschneider. He is talking about the All Access Pass to First Avenue, the new exhibit that opens the Minnesota History Center. He's the guy who literally wrote the book on First Avenue, and it's a really cool book. I'm sure it's still available. I got it from my husband as a Christmas gift, and he just loved it. And this exhibit is supposed to be really, really cool. I've talked to some people who worked with, not dropping names now, but I talked to some musicians who work with Prince, and they are really excited about it because it offers up just an incredible opportunity to look at this place that is in our backyard that has been the source of so much creativity and continues to be the source of so much creativity. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to chat with my friend, Professor David Schultz, once again. A whole heck of a lot to talk about as impeachment momentum grows in some quarters in Washington in the aftermath of Bob Mueller coming out. Can't wait to talk to David Schultz about that. He is a constitutional law professor in addition to being a political expert. Like to hear his take on exactly what Bob Mueller said and what Bob Mueller didn't say. Once again, a very nuanced statement there, but interesting to see what he has to say about it. So let's take a quick break. You are listening to News Talk 830. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Keep it right here, folks. It is 6:17 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Well, one of the fun things I got to do this year for my job over at TV is I got to go over and cover the legislature a lot more. And it's really, you know, I think that they get a tough knock over there. They are really just, you know, amazing people that are very dedicated, that really are there. No matter what party they are, they may disagree on policy, but I think they're all there because they really feel that serving in the legislature can make Minnesota a better place. And one of the representatives that I did get to meet as I was working over there this past session is Representative Jamie Becker Finn from Roseville, who is joining us right now to talk about a proposal that will provide transportation for child visits to Shakopee, a women's prison. And Representative Becker Finn, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, happy to be on with you.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, and you are also the assistant majority leader for the DFL caucus in the House, so you are a very busy legislator. But let me ask you about this proposal, because it's one that I think you have to think about it. And when you the more you think about it, the more you realize this could open doors and really help so many people.
Yeah, exactly. And so what this bill would do is it would fund a program that would provide transportation for children whose moms were incarcerated. Actually, 4 out of 5 women who are incarcerated at Shakopee are moms.
Wow.
And so it also has a literacy component where it's providing books to the children that they can read with their moms. And it really is, not only is it would potentially be so meaningful for these children, but it really could disrupt kind of the cycle of, poverty and, you know, some of the disparities that we see. It could really do a lot towards addressing those issues as well.
And how would the actual transportation part work?
So there's already, agreements. So there's a nonprofit, the Unprison Project, that is really the driving force behind this legislation, and they have agreements with bus companies, and those bus companies would, you know, on a regular basis, the buses would also be staffed with, you know, people to supervise the children that could also provide kind of some meaningful programming and connection between the kids while they're on the bus. And so there would be a bus, and it would be set days that would be planned out. And so these kids would know that they would get to see their moms on those days.
And when you think about it, and I think anybody with kids knows how difficult it is to do the transportation piece, you know, just to get kids to one place or another. But think about this. This is a family where, and these are still families, and these are still children, and these are still moms that are separated because they are in prison. And one of the goals of prison is rehabilitation. And what more inspiring tool could there be to somebody's rehabilitation than trying to improve your life for your child? I can't think of anything more.
Right. Absolutely. And the studies bring that home. You know, people who are incarcerated, if they have stronger connections to their family and specifically to their children, they tend to do better, you know, as far as recidivism is concerned, you know, as far as going back to prison in the future, they do a lot better than folks who are disconnected from their families and their communities. So it really is, it's addressing so many issues at the same time.
Okay. How did it fare in the legislature?
You know, unfortunately, we did not get it funded this round. As you know, when you've got, you know, one party that has one way of funding things and another party who would just as soon not really fund anything, you know, the targets were not really enough with some of the other priorities that had to be met. You know, it's disappointing because I think the money that would be saved by providing this service to families, it would, you know, eventually it would more than pay for itself. But, you know, we'll keep fighting for it. If there's a supplemental budget next year, we'll definitely be making that ask and continuing to bring attention to this issue, which is one of the great reasons, you know, I was really excited when you contacted me to talk about this so people
right.
know how
well,
important this
it,
is.
It really is, you know, and I'm sorry that I didn't know about it when during the session. because I would like to have done a story on it, and I think in the future I would. So, you know, please reach out to me, because I think it is important, and I think it's right now is this the Unprisoned Project Mama's Bus, is that actually able to get some kids there just on their own without the legislative funding?
You know, not at this point. And you know, that question was brought up when we had a hearing on the bill. You know, so it's a nonprofit, and obviously going to the legislature to ask for funding for things is not the easiest way to get something funded. But you know, the attempts that have been made to, you know, find donors and find other sources just haven't been enough. And kind of the infrastructure of being able to have a reliable, safe bus service and having the staff to do it, it isn't something that you can do piecemeal in a way that would be safe for those kids and those families.
Right. And then also you'd have to have somebody who could screen the applications, and you'd have
exactly.
And you can't just have, you could have, you know, maybe 12-year-olds on a bus. I mean, the logistics of that, as anybody who's had to drive kids around knows, it's hard. It's really hard, but I can't think of anything more worthwhile for these people. And I'm sure that there are many people, you know, if you don't live near Shakopee or that part of the Twin Cities, and you are incarcerated there, or your parents incarcerated there, it's probably very difficult to get down there or up there, depending on where you live.
Right. Well, and the other thing that we know is that disproportionately Native women are incarcerated, and a lot of those kids and those families are located in our tribal communities. So, you know, they're in...
Which are very far away.
Very far away. And so you're looking at a family with one parent who doesn't have an income. And so the ability to come up with the money to travel on any kind of regular basis with a child... You know, we think of, you know, that people have to pay the price for the crimes that they commit.
But absolutely.
Really, the children of people who are incarcerated pay an enormous, there's an enormous cost to the children in our state when they don't get to have that contact with their moms. I'm a mom myself. I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, and we as moms, I mean, you think of the most terrifying thing is the idea of being separated from your children.
Absolutely.
And so I think that really is important for all families, whether there's a parent who's incarcerated or not.
Right. And think about it from the child's perspective, to be able to continue that. And obviously, especially if you're talking about, and I know that you are very active. You yourself are Native American and have really worked so hard on so many issues. And I want to actually ask you about another issue that I talked to you about earlier in the legislative session involving the Lake Calhoun, B'day Mikaska. But I do want to ask you, is there a lot of support for this measure in the tribal communities that you've talked to?
Absolutely. I mean, and anything that we can do, again, you know, we talk a lot at the legislature about our youngest learners and our youngest kids, and we talk a lot about disparities in educational outcomes, in health outcomes, in job outcomes, and all those things are tied together. And if we stand a chance of kind of disrupting those cycles, we have to address things about what a kid's home life is like. And so this really has the potential to be kind of a revolutionary project at both helping the moms to reintegrate better once they're out of prison, but also being able to make something positive and help to set kids in a good direction so that they're not even more impacted by the separation from their parents.
And let me ask you, is there any effort at all made in sort of this vein in terms of dads who are imprisoned? Because we don't want to forget them as well.
Absolutely. And we talked about that at the hearing for the bill. And it's one of those things where there's a higher percentage of moms, who, you know, women who are parents incarcerated. And so this was just kind of a starting point. I mean, absolutely. If, you know, we couldn't even get this amount of funding to set up a pilot project at one of the prisons. But I think ideally, you would be able to have programs like this at every prison where you have parents who are separated from their kids.
And Shakopee is the main, I mean, you do have this incredible concentration of of women prisoners there. Obviously, it's only women's prison. So that would be, I mean, you'd, if you could get something going there, it would be remarkable.
Right. And the staff at Shakopee also are very, you know, they have other really great programs that are really unique. And so, it's an easy place to start where there's kind of already the framework and the frame of mind to try new things so that we have better outcomes there.
All right. I do want to ask you, because I know that you were one of the representatives after the court ruling on the Bidet-McCoska, name, when the court said no, the park board, or I'm sorry, the park board did not have the authorization to change the name. You actually put forward a proposal in the legislature and that, you know, to change the name officially to Bidet-McCoska. That also didn't get through. Where does all that stand?
Yeah, so I had amended that. You know, it happened, you know, within 24 hours of when we were debating the environment omnibus bill on the House floor. So we amended that in, so that was something we could bring to conference committee with us. During the time, you know, while all the conference committee work was happening, Representative Jamie Long introduced a bill. Bidet-McCoska is located in his district,
right.
So he also has a standalone bill. Unfortunately, that was one of the issues that the Republican Senate just would not discuss. It was kind of a no-go issue for them. You know, we weren't really given any reason for why that is, except that they weren't going to debate having that in whatever the final compromise bill was.
Got it. All right. Well, we'll see. That's still winding its way through the courts. The park board's doing various things. A lot going on that front. Well, listen, Representative Jamie Beckerfin, I hope that you're getting a little more time with your children after the session.
Yeah, my son's going to be at a soccer tournament in Bloomington.
Okay. There you go. Okay. But anyway, thank you so much for your time this evening. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Representative Jamie Beckerfin, one of the legislators many legislators of both sides that I interviewed working over on the TV side this past session. And it was a lot of fun being over there. All right, folks. And I do want to let you know that on all of these issues, you heard Representative Jamie Beckerfin talk about what she sees as how the Republicans weren't willing to do certain things. Well, I think the Republicans will say the Democrats were willing to do all these things that they didn't agree with. I will actually be sitting down with the governor. Governor Tim Walz tomorrow will be a live guest on WCCO-TV Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m. And he's going to be stopping by the station. We'll have him live and talk to him about the legislative session. I know that he feels sort of along the lines of Representative Jamie Beckerfin, who was, as I said, the Assistant Majority Leader for the DFL House. And it'll be interesting to hear what the governor has to say. The governor definitely has some strong opinions about what he would have liked to have gotten out of the legislature. Didn't get everything, got some things, has some plans for the next legislative session and certainly for the next biennium session as well. So please tune in. The governor will be a live guest on WCCO-TV Sunday morning. All right, we are going to take a break. We have got to give you some weather. And then after the weather break, we're going to talk with another state representative who's proposed this bill actually made it through the legislature, and it provides funding so people, the state could pay you to make your yard more bee friendly. And this story has gotten so much interest. I did it on the TV side. It's gotten a ton of interest. The Star Tribune did it as well. Well, we're going to talk with the legislator who's proposing this, who has proposed this. It's a law. It got passed. The governor has signed it. He's either signed it or he said he's going to sign it. And we will talk to Representative Kelly Morrison after this break for weather on News Talk 830. Getting paid to make your lawn bee friendly. It's a bill that passed in the legislature this past session. It was kind of buried in the environment omnibus funding bill. This half hour, we're going to talk first with the state representative who authored the bill. And then we're going to take a break to pay some bills. And then we're going to talk with a U of M graduate student who actually works with the bees and can do the science on this. But first, we're going to talk to the state legislator who helped get this through, Representative Kelly Morrison. Representative Morrison, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. And it's great to talk to you. I know I did this story over at on the TV side. You have a very interesting background. First of all, you represent the Deep Haven area, and you also are an OBGYN.
That's right. I am.
As I said, I haven't, I've done political stories for years, but I've spent more time at the legislature this past session than I have in other years. And I just think it's so fascinating the breadth and the diversity of the backgrounds of people in our legislature, I think is really interesting. But let me ask you, how did you come up with this idea? Because this is big. I mean, people are really interested in this.
People are really excited about this. I've been getting inquiries from a lot of people in my district, but really from all over the state, honestly. People are concerned about our pollinators and want to get involved. I think it's fantastic.
Right.
We owe a lot to the chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, Representative Rick Hansen, for being a champion of pollinators for many years. But I had the privilege of serving on that committee and was able to sponsor this bill.
Right. And so what does the bill do? Because it's not set up yet, but you did get the funding. Explain what the bill does.
That's right. So the bill aims to help homeowners transform their lawns into bee-friendly habitats. The Board of Bowser, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, is going to set up the specifics of the program this summer, and then we're hoping that people will be able to apply for it and put it into motion next spring and summer. And so up to 75% of projects will be covered, and then up to 90% in areas where there's a high likelihood that we can find rusty patch bumblebees, which have become endangered and have just recently become our state bee, by the way, again, thanks to Representative Hansen.
I didn't know that was something I missed in my TV story. So the rusty patch bumblebee is now the state bee in Minnesota?
That's right.
This is why you have to listen to News Talk 830. You're going to get all of these gems of information. The rusty patch bumblebee, which is endangered, and apparently the Twin Cities metro area is one of the few places where it's actually doing pretty well. So we want to increase those numbers. But how do you Representative Morrison? Do you envision that people would, when it's set up, and it won't be set up until probably next spring, is that people would apply or for a grant, or would they buy the seeds? You know, it's white clover, it's a creeping
wildflower,
yeah.
Yep, and native grasses. So they'll also get advice on what the appropriate plants to put in place of their lawns will be. But so the specifics will still need to be hashed out. But if people want to follow along with the development of it, they should go to the Board of Water and Soil Resources website, and they'll keep us updated there for when the applications become available.
Right. And what kinds of responses have you gotten and what kinds of emails have you gotten?
I've gotten just a flood of emails, literally hundreds and hundreds of people who are – we have a lot of great environmentalists in our state and people who, you know, recognize that important pollinators are and are really concerned about their imminent collapse. You know, a lot of us have become aware that their numbers have decreased precipitously. And they are crucial in terms of our food source. So if our pollinators go away, our source of food goes away. So we really depend on them. So we've got to nurture our little friends.
And it's $900,000, which in terms of allocations over there, you know, these billions and billions of dollars may not sound like a lot, but actually it doesn't cost a lot of money. These plants that you're talking about getting seeds for all of our lawns, they're actually relatively inexpensive.
That's exactly right. And, you know, people,
a lot of people could take advantage of this.
That's exactly right. And, you know, you can have a little patch of grass in an urban neighborhood and you can make a difference in terms of protecting pollinators. There's some really interesting new research that shows that actually our urban and suburban areas may be crucial to helping to preserve them. So I think there's a real opportunity for a lot of us, and we're hoping, you know, both that this will have real impact on the ground, but also it'll serve as a, you know, an education for all of us in terms of getting the word out about the importance of pollinators, and hopefully this can become an ongoing program.
All right, and we're going to talk a little bit about this with James Wolfen as well, who's a grad student at the U of M Bees Lab. You can still have the lawn and have a place where you can have a picnic or play catch. It's just a little. It's a little. You just kind of need to change your perspective on what is a really great lawn. And for some people, you know, I think maybe it's the sort of 1950s standard. It's every grade is perfect and it's 1 inch high and it's just all the same. And okay, that's one lawn, but just a minor shift here with a little white clover here and a little, maybe a few dandelions there. That also can be, or also some thyme. It's creeping thyme. I can't remember. I'm going to have to ask him because
Creeping Charlie.
Creeping Charlie. I don't know if that's it either. But just the things that you might think of as weeds can actually, you know, are great for pollinators. And
absolutely. And they can be quite beautiful as well. And they're lower maintenance. You don't have to mow them. Just let them grow naturally.
And you know what James also told me? He's going to come on here in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
You want the lawn longer, folks. It's the long look. The bees like it. So,
and don't be afraid of dandelions. Embrace the dandelions.
There you go. Well, listen, Representative Kelly Morrison, Dr. Morrison, thank you so much for coming on. As I said, we're going to talk to James here in just a little bit. And congratulations on the bill. And congratulations, you've got a hit on your hand.
Oh, well, thank you so much for the opportunity, Esme.
Absolutely. All right.
Have a good day.
So that was Representative Kelly Morrison, who is the person who backed the bill. We're going to take a break here, and then we're going to be joined by James Wolfen, who's the grad student at the U of M's Bee Lab. And the U of M has a lot of wonderful programs in the sciences, but their ag department and their ag school is just fabulous. But they have some of the top bee experts and the top bee program in the nation. So they really are national experts over there. And James Wolfen is a grad student who helped, you know, work on this. And he was great because he can kind of explain some of the kinds of things, some of the plants and how it's going to work sort of logistically, what the lawn would look like. And it's really cool. But I think what's so interesting about this is, the Star Tribune did a story on this. WCCO TV did a story on this bill. And the web hits, the number of people who clicked on that story on our website, through the roof. There's an unbelievable interest in creating these pollinator habitats in our backyards. And I thought what was so interesting is what Representative Morrison said, is that you don't really need a giant lawn. You can have like the tiny little space, you know, just out front, just a little bit of grass or a few flowers, that can do it. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by James Wolfen, who is with the U of M's Bee Lab, and he's going to talk to us more about how you can make your yard bee-friendly and how this legislation is going to work. All right, folks, we are talking bees, and as promised, we now have James Wolfen, who is a grad student at the U of M's Bee Lab. James, I talked to you for TV. I told you you might be getting a call from radio, too.
Hey, how's it going? It's great to call in.
All right. Well, listen, you were great the other day. We just had Representative Kelly Morrison on. You actually work with bees, you study bees, and you had some input into this legislation along with other folks at the U of M's Bee Lab. People, you know, are maybe thinking, oh, my gosh, my yard's going to be covered with bees. I won't be able to use my yard again. That's not what you're talking about, is it?
No. And first to clarify, so me personally, I didn't have input into this legislation, but my advisor, Marla Spivak, she is on that committee who did have a lot of that input. But in terms of how these lawns actually function, so the overarching goal of these pollinator-friendly lawns, these bee lawns, is to create a lawn in an area that's useful for both humans and for our pollinators. So we kind of want to find that middle ground where we could still keep it that recreational surface that we all value while still providing some forage for our pollinators.
Right. And in terms of, you know, what the yard would look like, you and I were talking about this the other day. It's kind of rethinking what's a great lawn. And it's just a little tweak, but you can still do many of the things that we've all enjoyed on the lawn, like playing catch or having a picnic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What we really want to do is we want to showcase the power of just a small change and how that can impact your pollinators and kind of the ecosystem from the top down, or rather from the bottom up, I guess.
Right. And what are some of the things that that can help bring pollinators back?
Yeah, so really what we're trying to promote is that no matter how small the area, whether it's in your front lawn or if you have, you know, acres upon acres, if you just add some forage back to that landscape, you're providing important forage for the pollinators and the bees, all of those important insects that exist within our urban areas. And as these urban areas continue to thrive and grow, it's really important that we have some sources of forage everywhere from our lawns to our gardens to our public parks. And just putting some small, low-growing species in with your grass can make such incredible changes.
And, you know, you were saying, because I asked you, I said, well, what, you know, I guess there are people probably listening to us, you know, who are saying, well, what if all the pollinators went away? That would make a big difference in terms of what we ate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would make a really huge difference. So the stat that we love to throw around is that just about one-third of every bite you eat is thanks to pollinators. And really, it's so many of the foods that we really enjoy. So our fruits and vegetables, things like watermelon, tomato, all different kinds of berries, they're really dependent on that bee pollination, whether it's a honeybee or a bumblebee or any of the, you know, nearly 400 different bee species in the state of Minnesota and, you know, 20,000 around the world. All those bees contribute to that palette that we really value as consumers.
And, you know, one of the things that you were talking about, and actually Representative Morrison mentioned it, and actually I didn't realize the rusty patch bumblebee is now the official bee of Minnesota.
Yeah. That's something that we're really excited about here in the Bee Lab. So one of my colleagues, her name is Elaine Evans. She was really one of the main promoters of that. And just some little background about the rusty patch bumblebee. So we're talking about a species that was once prominent throughout the Midwest, throughout the United States. It was one of the most common bumblebee species we had in this entire state. And now nationwide, we've seen really dramatic declines in its population numbers. It's the first endangered bee species in the continuous United States. So the lower 48, I guess you could say. And we want to do what we can to make sure that that species doesn't go extinct. So by making it the state bee, we're really just getting so much great awareness for the bee and its population status. And hopefully land managers will start to make changes to the landscape that they interact with in ways that will help support this species.
And did that happen this past legislative session, that it became the state bee?
Yeah. In fact, I believe it's something that just happened within the past few weeks.
Wow. Okay. So I was not aware of that. And the rusty patch bumblebee, it's kind of, you know, just looking at the photographs of it, because to me, and I don't mean to sound ignorant here, but a lot of the bees look alike. This one's, if you look at these pictures, though, they really are very different. And this one is sort of, it looks a little chubbier.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're not alone.
I'm not fat shaming the bee, but I'm just saying it looks a little bit rounder.
Yeah. So it's a big, you know, kind of plump bee, but so many of the different species of bumblebees, you know, have that similar body shape to them. But what really sets this apart is it has that little tan strip in between its yellow bands on its abdomen.
Got it. Okay. And you said that the rusty patch is especially good at pollinating tomatoes and apples, which we all love.
Yeah. So that's kind of, it's more so specific to bumblebees, but the rusty patch falls into that group. So what's really unique about bumblebees is they can conduct what's called buzz pollination. So some plants, you know, like the tomato, that pollen can be really difficult to dislodge. But bumblebees, with their big body and their, you know, really fuzzy long hairs, when they buzz, it can release that pollen that's really difficult to dislodge.
Okay, and so that's why you're trying to bring that. And you were also saying, though, that while it is endangered, it actually has a little bit of a stronghold here. Is that right?
Yeah, and so here in Minnesota, we actually have really strict rules about how we sample for pollinators, or rather here in like Hennepin County and kind of in the greater Twin Cities area. And that's because in this location, we've seen a lot of sightings and captures of the rusty patch bumblebee. So we want to make sure that population that we know is still here, we want to make sure that it can grow and thrive rather than risk capturing it or doing some sort of land practices that might create further risk for the species.
All right. And again, we're talking about this new bill that passed the legislature that provides $900,000 in funding that really for next year, where people will, and you haven't worked out, the details haven't been worked out, but you'll either be able to apply as an individual or maybe get reimbursed for you know, planting your yard with a little bit of white clover. And does it take, does a little bit go a long way? I mean, just a little bit of white clover make a difference on your yard?
So firstly, every time I hear that $900,000 number, my heart still flutters. But moving on from that, yeah, it really is incredible just how much of a difference a small investment can make. So here I'm just talking financially. So when I look at different seed providers, white clover is so easy to produce, where a pound of seed for Dutch white clover is just around $7. And that much seed can cover, you know, we're talking about acres of land.
Wow.
So yeah, exactly. So here in an urban or suburban community, just here in the Twin Cities, a small investment, you plant it and, you know, watch it grow. If you really take the time and to watch the diversity of pollinators that use that species, through my research, we've documented that 55 different bee species will use Dutch white clover.
Here in Minnesota?
So even more restricted range. So just in Minneapolis Park, that's where I restricted my sampling to, and we saw 55 bee species on Dutch white clover alone.
So in Minneapolis Parks, wow.
Yeah, in Minneapolis Parks, correct. So right. To put that number into context, that's nearly 20% of the entire state's bees. And we're only sampling in such a small area on just one floral species. So it really speaks to the magnitude of, you know, a small change, a small investment, just making such monumental impact.
Okay. I'm sure there are people out there going, well, I'd love to help save the bees, but I don't want my kids or my pets to get stung. And you have an anecdote there saying you have not been stung very much at all, despite all the years that you worked with bees.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, one of the great things about doing this research is there's really no greater advocate for a bee lawn than me, because no one spent more time in these lawns. So in the 3 or so years I've been working in these lawns, you know, walking through these plantings for hours upon hours a day, I've really only been stung twice. And once was up with my own fault because a bee got stuck in my shoe, and I really can't blame her on that one.
And I love the way you refer to bees as female bees. Are there, I suppose this is really a dumb question, are there female bees and male bees? There probably have to be.
Yeah, so there are female bees and male bees, but it does get a little interesting where sometimes the male bees are a little bit less active. That's especially true in the case of honeybees. So most of the bees that we will capture are generally female bees, but we still do see some males out foraging from time to time.
Right. And I don't know how we all miss the memo that the rusty patch bumblebee is now the state bee of Minnesota. I mean, I feel like I've got to do a separate story on that.
Oh, I sure hope so. Yeah. And I mentioned her before, but Elaine Evans, she's a postdoc in our lab. She's just been doing such great research, really with all bumblebees, but she's been such a great outspoken advocate for this species because it's so important to kind of, you know, make sure that no species goes forgotten. We want to make sure that this species can rebound and it doesn't get, you know, lost within the greater diversity of Minnesota bees.
Okay, now I just had a brainstorm here. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, can you put white clover near ivy?
In your ivy?
Yes, because I'm just thinking Target Field has a new wall of ivy. I'm trying to combine two, like, winning things here, bees and the Twins.
The Twins are winning right now.
Yes.
That's really a source of happiness for so many Minnesotans this spring so far. But these seeds and most flower seeds, they need to make contact with the ground surface.
Oh, okay.
So it's not quite a great spot there. But who knows? Maybe we can convince them to plant them in the South Territory or something.
There you go. Okay. All right. Just thinking about that. That could be like, you know, one of the Twins' causes, helping to bring back the rusty patch bumblebee. What's that?
Oh, I was just going to say, Minnesota is already one of the great states in terms of advocating for bees. Why not the Twins?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and you want to attach yourself, the bees want to attach yourself to a winner, so why not the Twins? I mean, they're doing pretty well right now. All right, listen, James, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Hey, it was so great to be on, and thank you for taking the time to cover this story.
Absolutely. All right. Again, folks, the rusty patch bumblebee is the new State B, in case you were not aware that there was a State B, and I didn't even know there was a State B. I did a story on it. All right, coming up, we are going to talk to the person who actually wrote the book on First Avenue. He literally wrote the book on it, and he is going to talk about the new history exhibit at the Minnesota History Center.